welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast. Real beers, real breweries, real opinions. Sponsored by this week in craft.beer. Sign up to the free weekly newsletter. Get all the craft beer news from your favourite breweries and that all-important new beers list as well. This week in craft.beer. And we're powered by Patreon. Head to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Show your support for the podcast and you can get access to exclusive content. patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Hello and welcome to another weekly episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast. Real beer, real breweries, real opinions. As always, head over to Instagram, Facebook and Twitter pages. Search Beer Fridge Podcast and wherever you listen to this podcast, like, follow and share and subscribe. Hit that ding-a-ling-a-ling to be notified of the latest episodes. Why would you not want to find every single episode of the Beer Fridge Podcast? I do not know why. As well, give us some 5 stars, drop us a like, a wee comment as well. It helps with the algorithm and all that jazz, makes us get notified and put on people's pages so more people can enjoy our subtle and luxurious tones. I'm back, baby. A week off.
You can tell you've had a week off, isn't it?
I've had a week off and I'm back.
Monster introduction.
I'm ready to rock and roll. My name's Gav. I've got my usual drinking partners, Scott and Marky Boy. Good evening.
Evening, fellas. Evening. Tonight we're joined by Bob from Dogs Falls Brewing. How you doing, mate?
Not bad, thanks.
Good to have you on.
Sorry, you had to witness that intro. Apologies.
we're used to Gav rambling off the start, to be fair, so we always end up apologising to the guests. So, but no, this is one we're really looking forward to. See, it's been recommended by a listener of ours as well, which is Hops of the Highlands, which Dave, so thanks.
Hop to the Highlands, Dave.
What was that, sorry?
Hop to the Highlands. Get it right. Highlands.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah, my bad. We've got to get the boys' hashtag right for reaching out. But yeah, now looking forward to this one. So we kind of start as we kind of normally do, and we'll go around the old virtual drinking table and see what we're on. So Gilroy, since you're up first, tell us what you got.
Yes. So I've opened Resonate. Thankfully, Bob managed to get us some beers, which is awesome.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
The 5.6% IPA Wackagen is excellent. One for the hop heads, which it definitely is. It's definitely got that kind of resinous, piney flavour, but it does kind of travel towards a kind of sweetness, I think, towards the end. It's perfectly kind of well-balanced in that. It's got something for everybody, but that resinous punch that you're looking for is definitely there in spades. It's definitely one for those of us that like that kind of hop bitterness. It's superb. It's a great example. 5.6% means it's perfectly sessionable, but packs a flavor punch that goes well beyond that, I would say. I think it's something you could have quite comfortably, but still have discovering flavors in it as you go through, maybe one or two or three, who am I kidding, cans as you enjoy it. It's perfect. It's the, we talk about kind of perfect starter beers, and that's definitely one that just kind of zings the taste buds back to life after a day, for me anyway, in the office drinking coffee and water all day. So it definitely brings the taste buds back to life, and it's sitting well at the moment. It'll not last long.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds the bollocks. Marky Boy.
Sounds awesome. So again, I'm on Five Horizons, so the oatmeal milk stout, 4.8%. Normally, I don't start with stouts, but it's definitely stout season. It's dark, it's cold, and between the two beers I've got, I usually drink them sort of in ABV and kind of build my way up. So this is the lighter of the two. I've got to admit, like, a really, really lovely bodied stout at 4.8%. It kind of coats your tongue. It's packed full of chocolate. It has this really nice kind of sweetness that kind of comes through, whether it's vanilla or it's the lactose or both, let's be honest, that adds to that sweetness. But for like a 440 ml can as well. It's just like Miguel mentioned on the, with the other can, it kind of punches a little bit higher. Like it, the body of it is more than the ABV would entail, which I quite like in a stout. I want a stout to feel that I'm drinking something. It's a dark kind of winter beer, and it really does sort of sit there, but the sweetness just kind of breaks it up and just makes it so like clean drinking. So I've got to admit, for it's probably one of the first I've kind of refrained away from the stouts until the weekend there and sort of starting to build it up. So by saying it's one of the best stouts I've had in the last wee while, it's probably not doing it the justice that it deserves, but it's a very, very good beer.
Kicking off your stout season in style, it sounds like, mate. Like it. I like it a lot. Bob, yourself, what are you on, mate?
I am also drinking Resonate right now. Mine's a light fill, but apart from that, it's thank you very much for all the kind things you've said about my beers. I'll give you some cash later on, guys. you've kind of hit on a point there that both of you with the beers, which is something that I'm kind of consciously trying to do, which is to sort of drop the ABVs in a lot of cases and still pack the flavour. Yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of facing of higher and higher ABVs, and obviously you can pack in loads of flavour into an 8% double or whatnot. But for me, there's something there in trying to scoop that flavour into lower ABV beers. So interested that you've picked that up. It's quite cool. But yeah, I'm on my second light fill of Resonate at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think. Sorry, Gil, carry on.
Sorry, I was just going to ask what's the hop combo in the Resonate?
Resonate is primarily Amarillo. And brings up the recipe. There's Amarillo and Mochueca in the boil. I think a combination of Amarillo and Magnum for the bittering, and then late in the boil we've got a bunch of Amarillo and Mochueca, and then dry hop is the Amarillo and Mochueca and Centennial, Columbus, because Columbus is just awesome in that West Coast world. And a little bit of Citra, just to sort of give it a wee bit of a lift, bring some higher notes in there. I think the West Coast is a beer that's been neglected. I think it's hard for me to find good examples. And it was the West Coast that kind of got me to awesome beer.
Yeah.
A mate hands you a can of Punk when you don't know what's going on, and you drink it and you think that's great, and you go on a little journey, and it ends up in Dale's Pale Ale and all this stuff that you can get from America. That's even though it's past its sell by date, it's still just destroying you. Previously, in my beer journey, I went on a bit of a bitterness crusade to try and to find the most bitterest beers, and the sort of landscape has shifted away from that a little bit nowadays towards haze, which I still absolutely love. But I think there's always going to be a place for a piney resinous beer with a good hit of bitterness, and every time I brew this I'm putting a little bit more in the 60 minute edition and hoping that people will come with it and kind of racking up those IBUs with every batch because it's a fun journey to go on just tasting IBUs.
Well, you're definitely singing off Mark's hymn sheet.
Everything you just said there, I would 1,000% agree with. The West Coast is the best coast. It's not even close. And the flavour and that, like you were saying that, like the Centennial and the Columbus hop, when it comes to like West Coast, the combo and that sort of kind of earthy bitterness that comes through is just phenomenal. You mentioned Dale's Pale. We've mentioned Sierra Nevada on here plenty of times as well for taking it west. And I think it is a style of beer that is neglected a little bit, and it's not as kind of like flashy as the big juice bomb Nipahs and Deepas and all the rest of it, but there is nothing better than a big dirty bitter IPA that you can just enjoy. And I know we're going to mention it, and I know it's off topic from your brewery, but we got the best West in the land, in my opinion, on cask at the weekend at 4% or something like that.
It's round about the 7 mark, cask. And it was absolutely superb.
Cask
on cask.
Cask.
Yeah, aye. So it's called Cone. It's by a brewery based in Bonehead by Top Out, and they just have on cask. It was absolutely superb. The Black Cat in Edinburgh had it, and as soon as it was up Sunday at 10:30 in the morning, they posted it was going to be on. And our first, we were out for a couple of beers. The guys that live in Scotland, and it immediately changed their first pub. So a bit of a trek along to the Black Cat to start there, and it was the perfect place to start. However, I would say that the Top Out one, the Cone, just as if you're already on that train, then it's welcome. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, though, Bob, you're moving things a wee bit each batch as you go, and I think that's brilliant because it still gives you, like Motueka gives you something to cling on to. If you have been a kind of hazier person, it gives you something to your taste buds to go to, and then you move a wee bit and that flavour develops. So that complex hop bill that you've got really allows you to keep people that maybe have not started or have come on the train at hazy, and lets them kind of advance, if you like, along the kind of West Coast route without maybe being slightly off put, in which I think the Cone can maybe be. If you're not on that bit on the street already, you're definitely not getting on there.
You're wrong,
but it's not necessarily the place to start, but it develops as you go. Your taste buds get used to it, and then they pick out the other things. The Amarillo, the slight bit of Citra that's there, it also lets those that are on that bitterness train get a wee bit of something else as well. I think it does a really good job.
Yeah, it's definitely a journey. And as I alluded to when we were talking before we started, it's we're quite far north here, and I'm super keen for my beers to be enjoyed by craft beer people.
Yeah.
But also by people who just like beer.
Yes.
So kind of taking them and yeah, you're right, exactly. The Motueka, the Citra side of things, it gives them a tie if they've had a sort of, you know, nicer beer than whatever they might have been drinking previously.
You can see tenants, it's fine, it's fine. You can see
it. It gives them somewhere to go, and that was a big part of my craft beer a few years ago for me was getting on that sort of where's this going to take it. But you need a step, you need a stepping stones to kind of get there.
No, definitely. Alex, we've got Bob here from Dog Falls Brewing, based up near Inverness. Give us a little bit of your background and how you got into craft beer.
I was a home brewer for a few years, and I kind of fell into home brewing by an accident, and I was like a fairly keen but terrible mountain biker for most of my life, really, and I hurt my back really badly, maybe 2015, something like that, and I sort of idly bought a biab kit on the internet because I couldn't ride my bike, and I was like, right, I need a hobby, I need something that I can do that doesn't involve me riding my bike, and I kind of thought nothing of it. It was just like a sort of lunchtime at work purchase, and I got the thing and I brewed my first beer, and then all of a sudden I was like, holy shit, I can't not do this anymore. Like, I had no idea that it was going to grab me. And but it did. And then I was like, right, I need to do this again and again and again. And it's kind of basically grown from there. You know, life changes, work changes, all that kind of stuff. It was an opportunity to move back to where I'm from. And it was like, right, it's now or never, give it a go. And so went from, you know, 20-liter batches. I kind of progressed fairly quickly from a five-liter biab kit to the all grain, 20-liter batches, filling corny kegs and try to build teasers and all that kind of nonsense. And then got the chance to give it a bath, basically. Got a 500-liter kit installed in the garage, as you do. You know, you just get some people in China to make you a brew kit, and you just go for it.
Start.
So it was always about just making good beer. That's the premise of it. I mean, I'm terrible at sales. I'm terrible at marketing. So I just hope that that I would be able to sort of cover those shortfalls by just making beer that was good enough to sort of get noticed and carry a sort of, you know, for the sales to happen by themselves almost. That's the plan. Willfully naive is the is the phrase that I like to use to describe it.
I think it's safe to say, like, I mean, if I'm looking at the can art and stuff, like, the cans pop, they stand out in a crowd. You're definitely ones you're going to, when you walk in a bottle shop or you see them in a market or something, you're definitely going to want to go up and pick them up. Like, the can art looks amazing. Like, I don't know about you two guys.
I would agree.
I like the kind of brushed look. It definitely makes it stand out. I like the logo. The logo's incredible. That's really well done. It stands out, as you say, Gav. It's got all the makings of everybody else. It's got the makings of an excellent kind of branding. So the not very good at marketing thing is
exactly.
You've put the right components together in the right place, at least with the product itself, which, as you're saying, it's the beer will sell itself, and that comes with the packaging and stuff. Aye. And it looks amazing. It does look really, really good.
Thank you very much.
No.
So who came up with the logo? Was that you? Did you draw that up?
Yeah, I'm a control freak. self-confessed control freak. I tried to get people to design it because I don't know how to do that thing, and everything that came back was like, actually, do you know what? I'll just do it. I have to do it myself. That was down to me, and then I got somebody to digitize it because that's out with my skills. I guess in terms of the branding and stuff like that, all of the photos that on every single can was basically taken on one afternoon stroke evening, driving about in the car around about where we live looking for some pictures to put up, and then just messed about with in like a free graphic design software, because there's nowhere in my budget that you could ever fit a graphic designer to come along and do it. And at the same time, I also know that the graphic designer's he doesn't know what's in the can. He doesn't know what he's trying to present to people. So it's all of that stuff just kind of comes together under me, just sort of hashing it out.
Yeah.
And kind of like, you know, just put it out. I mean, the first six beers that we put out, I was like up at 3 in the morning finishing off labels and writing absolute garbage on the back of the cans. To send them off to the printers, 9 o'clock the next morning, so we'd have beer in time for them at the market, and it's just born of necessity, really. At this scale, you just have to do everything yourself, and I think that kind of it comes across, and I think that's a positive thing. But at the same time, it means that I don't get to bed till 3 a.m.
No, it's something that we've mentioned several times on the podcast. When you get a brewery, when you know it's all hand done and it's come from the heart and it's come from where you want it to be in the perspective, like you said, being controlling and you've got everything the way you want it, I can admire that because you're singing from my hymn sheet. And like you said, there's no pop-up. Why would you hire a graphic designer when there's plenty of apps and stuff where and programs on the internet that are absolutely free, which I use as well.
Yep.
To do all the graphics for the podcast.
The world, the information available, if you're keen to learn about stuff, the amount of information out there nowadays is just mental. It's mind-boggling. It's almost too much. And it's the same, you know, I presume you guys are all brewing or have brewed or something like that. And I don't think when I was a home brewer, I've ever like typed a question into Google and not found
a thousand different answers.
all of which may be different, but and it's, you know, if you want to learn stuff, the world's your oyster these days. So go with it.
The cool thing about, like you say, the homebrewing aspect too now is that everything's getting tried. You know, there's not like when it comes to, we're talking about the weird and wonderful before in terms of the flavorings, but everybody's just thrown anything into beers now to see what it comes out like. And if you're going to ruin a 20 liter batch because you're going to try and put seaweed, figs and cinnamon into a beer, then you just go for it, you know. And if it comes out and it's amazing, then hallelujah, you've hit the lottery by the sounds of it. But if it doesn't, then it's, you know, 20 litres and you kind of toss it down the sink, or you find your drinking mates that you usually go with and you have a couple of cans each and get rid of it. But the one thing I wanted to ask you was, you obviously said you started like sort of homebrewing and that. What was the kind of the first recipes that you made that you said to yourself, actually, this tastes all right? And like when you think about those recipes now compared to what you're brewing, and even just the complexity of in terms of the hop bill and the malt bill, excuse me, and the hop, like the grain and everything that you're putting in terms of timings and stuff, what's the biggest differences?
I would say that first of all, when I said earlier on that I was hooked from the first batch that I brewed, I mean, that batch was awful. That batch was rough. It was nasty, and it was the process of brewing that kind of hooked me. But batch was flipping awful. And the next batch got better.
I bet you at the time you were like, this is half drinkable. This is good. And then you gave it to somebody else. I'm like, oh, Bob.
And they're like, aye. Yeah. You just handed me a homebrew look, because I mean, homebrew is both at the same time it's the best beer in the world and it is also the worst beer in the world. But when you're a homebrewer and you hand people who are not into brewing your beer, they've got that look in their eyes. They always do, like, oh my god, I'm going to have to say that this, but I know that it's going to taste garbage. I guess, I mean, in terms of the difference, I think, like you're saying, you can, when you've got a 20 litre batch that nobody's sort of nobody's livelihood is dependent upon, you can you can experiment a lot more. You can throw cinnamon and seaweed into a beer if you want to. I guess I've learned more about where you can go, as in, you know, brewing. One of the things that attracts me about brewing is the fact that it's based on fundamentals. That humanity, whatever we do, has no effect on the fundamentals. You know, yeast, wonderful single cell organism, and all that kind of jazz. So you can mess about. You can throw stupid stuff in the beer, but you have to stay in the room in terms of the science of it all. So yeah, you can afford to be more experimental with a 20-liter batch, but you still have to get your fundamentals right.
Yep.
You know, you still have to hit your mass pHs, you still have to get your work right, or you could miss an opportunity where you've put some in the beer and it turns out it tastes awful, but actually it's because you didn't have your fundamentals.
It's nothing to do with that. It's another variable that's ended up being wayward, but you might never go back to that ingredient combination again thinking that it was the ingredients that caused the problem.
Yeah, so I think that the biggest change from those days is the sort of backing up the sort of, I'll just throw some stuff in and hey, it came out good with an increase in knowledge in the chemistry and in the world that we have to live in. And that's not just, you know, having a dissolved oxygen meter and finding out that everything's fine. It's, you know, it's learning, it's processing the sort of what you get back from a beer. It's trying something different, you know, going for different mash pH or something like that, but having a better knowledge of what that is going to do in the beer, having a better knowledge of how hops respond to temperature. There's things that you just cannot do on a 20 liter kit that you can do on a bigger kit. And I mean, my kit at 500 liters is tiny.
Yeah.
Compared to almost, you know, compared to most other breweries that are making a decent living out of the process. But there's things that you can do on a kit this size that doesn't translate to a 20 liter kit. So you kind of get a bit more understanding of that. I mean, circulating down to the heat exchanger. Pretty much, you know, all the recipes that I started with, all the six recipes that I brewed from day one, they were all brewed on a 20-liter kit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all much better on a 500-liter kit than they were on a 20-liter kit, it's particularly the hazies, particularly the NEPAs, because it just seems to work better. At scale, you don't seem to get nearly as much harshness in the hops. You don't get that green bite with the same quantity.
Yeah, exactly. And then and you're also like understanding your kind of the water and stuff that you're using. I know we've mentioned a couple of brews before, like understanding the water that you're using and if you need to add any stuff to it has been really interesting for us as well. One thing I was going to ask, which just slipped my mind, where has it went to? Oh, what was it? I've just completely forgot what it was. I had it in my head and it was a brilliant question that just fucking went, shoop, see you later. What was that?
She's I all right?
No, I did. It was good. Mm-hmm. I forgot what it was.
Okay. A week after, you forgot everything already.
I forgot how to do a podcast. Just totally. One thing I have got written down as a question was dream collaborations. Obviously done a collaboration with Brewtoon. And that's still available, I believe. Is there a dream collab you've got out there that you go, you know what, that's a brew I would really love to work with?
Yeah, the Brewtune one is still available in all good beer shops. I guess I've never actually thought about that. Brewtune just kind of, Danny just phoned me up out of the blue and was like, do you want a collab? And I was like,
all right.
Of course I do. I was like, aye. but I've never, I mean, I guess, you know, The Alchemist, like that would be awesome. But I guess probably my favourite two brewers in the UK at the moment is, I don't know, Verdant would be awesome. Left Handed Giant would be awesome.
Oh, that's a good shout.
I mean, those guys are not going to phone me up, and I'm not going to phone them up.
You never know.
I like the local element. You know, it would be nice. It's nice because I mean, Brewtune are like a couple of hours. I like the idea that the beer is a sort of perishable. That it's. I think we buy beer at pretty cheap prices off of a supermarket shelf, but it's been in a warehouse. It's been in, sitting at ambient temperature for weeks, months, what have you, before. I quite like the idea of having, you know, a local brewery where you get your beer from, and it tastes good, not because it's a better beer fundamentally, but because it hasn't been through that process.
It's fresh.
So, I think probably I'd like to do collabs with brewers from round about here.
Yeah, definitely. I've remembered my question, by the way. I've remembered it. It was obviously, so the craft beer scene in the UK is growing pretty fast. And obviously the central belt of Scotland is growing really fast as well. How do you find it, obviously being based in Inverness, that's slightly further north, it's a little bit rural. How have you found the scene up there, and how difficult has it been to kind of get a foothold in the market?
It's definitely different. It's definitely different. I mean, we've got probably three or four pubs that I could go to and get a pint of beer. And they are really good pubs. But the other bars are largely awful. So from the brewery point of view, trying to get kegs out hasn't been particularly easy. It's interesting because it feels like, you know, Dundee's got it. Aberdeen obviously has it, but it feels like Inverness has just been sitting there kind of waiting. And I mean, there has been, there is great breweries around here that have been here for a while, but it doesn't feel like there's a sort of drive for you know, somebody putting up a bar that's got 20, 30 lines on the go. And I think that's an important part of what I want to do with Dogfall, sort of bring that to Inverness, because the people are key. When we started off, I thought, you know, we're going to have to work hard to get our sales. But actually, it's been quite sort of motivating that there's been so many people who are super keen on getting good beer, super keen on getting fresh beer that tastes really good, super keen on getting local beer, but it's certainly not the majority of the population. And you can't walk down the street and there's the Ham and Bat or there's a Grunt and Growler or anything like that. It's not at that level yet, but it feels like it's coming. It's only going to come if people actually deliver it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. I think it's good for us anyway. Like as a podcast, we had known all of you and have seen plenty of stuff on Instagram and stuff, but then to get a message from a listener and a follower of the podcast and go, look, you need to get Dog Falls Brewing on the podcast, is like, the beers are tremendous, you will not be disappointed. Like, that's the stuff we love. Like, we love getting introduced to new breweries that we've never tried the beer, and then to find out actually we've missed out, like, we should be trying more of this stuff, and we're like, fucking yes, here we go. It's great. And you always feel like you found a wee cult almost, and it's a wee secret, and then no one else should know about it. You've got this wee secret in your back pocket. You should check out Dog Falls. Their beers are fucking fantastic. And then, when you obviously big time, you're like, I was there first. Fuck you guys.
You got to be stealth. You know, I think that's one of the things that there's a lot of hype going around. Like I said, I'm terrible at sales and terrible at marketing, as in, you know, standing up and telling people I'm a beer. And it results in that kind of slow burn, I think, where kind of word of mouth is the driver, hopefully, and that you guys start hearing about it and it builds, and that happens locally as well as
And that's where you want it. You want people within, and it's not like, I mean, we talk about breweries, the amount of breweries we've got on our doorstep that are within 30 to 45 minutes. It's not like that up north. It's 45 minutes, and you've got to drag people. If you're talking about a craft beer place that's maybe got 20 lines in, you've got to drag people from wherever they are, which could be, it could be anything for 15, 20 minutes to an hour, to get there and drag them there every time. But it's, if it builds locally and spreads out, then you've got hopefully consistency in your customer base that you can then rely on as a producer to say, well, I know I'm going to shift that because I can shift that within 10 miles or 15 miles or 20 miles, and then I can go hunting for the rest as and when they come to me. And I'll get people that maybe travel up when things are opened up again, and we can they can then take that a wee bit wider, or hopefully speaking to us, and then that sends things a wee bit wider. And they come to you. That's what you want. Like you're talking about the American breweries that got you into the scene. The American approach is all based on brew pubs, isn't it? At the moment, where their side of things, they're dragging folk out to wait in queues. If you think about Trillium and stuff like that, at three different locations in Boston and at northeast corner of the US, and they're dragging people there for everywhere to go and get their beer and stand and wait. Talking about folk that make like the barbecue and stuff like that, the food producers that are doing it kind of craft, they're dragging people from across the country to go and get their stuff. That's the kind of custom that you're looking for, because it maintains consistency, and the word of mouth thing means that it's no flash in the pan. Hype is just that, it's hype. If you hit on two, then that's fine. But as soon as someone else comes along, they're gone, they're away. Whereas if you build the customer base for your doorstep out, hopefully you've got a consistent group there that you can then build on and then experiment with and then push stuff as you go. And like you say, it's natural. It's not a big hype train that then you're thinking, Christ, the pressure's on here. I've got to continue this, otherwise it'll be a flash in the pan.
Absolutely. No, it's true. I mean, there's no budget for a social media manager or anything like that. But if there was, and you just kind of push that through, then, you know, how do you continue that if you need to change people and you need to grow and all that kind of stuff? Everything is kind of bang on for the sort of path that I'm trying to sort of forge here, which is about the beer first and the packaging second.
The beat isn't important.
It has to lead, or the whole
substance has to be there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And if I, like I said, willfully naive, but I do believe that the people will come back for good beer if they're beer geeks or if they just enjoy having a beer, then all of those people will come back for good beer, and to me that's what it's all about. It's not about the next fad, although I want to know what that is to see if it's good, because you know, NEIPAs came out of that and they're no longer a fad, and you know, they're kind of driving the experience for people who've never tried a beer before, and that would a quality beer that would get scared off by a super duper West Coaster. It's definitely about beer as a medium for you know, punctuating that moments in your life and just something to actually enjoy, rather than because this brewery's got excellent branding or this brewery's got their social media and all that kind of stuff. That's all well and good, but the beer has to be right at the forefront of that.
100%. Could not agree more on that, definitely. While the boy's going to grab himself another beverage. Sorry, mate.
Just because it's kind of leading off of where you were, obviously talking about the beer. And when I was kind of looking through, obviously, your web shop, I was going to say website there, that was close. You have actually got a really wide range of beer, and I think that's quite an appealing aspect from, like what you say, you're trying to ensure that you have something for everyone, even if you're a beer geek or a non-beer geek, or, you know, you're getting introduced, you know, you've got everything in there from, you know, a wheat beer to your pale ale, you've got your American pale, you had a red rye beer in there, if I remember correctly, you obviously got your NEIPA. I just think, like, from if you're looking to pull everybody and anybody in, when you're talking like beer is the what's in the can is the main thing you're looking at, you're kind of covering your spread at the same time, you're not just kind of nailing your flag to the mast with, we're doing pale ales, and you know, we're going to do a pale ale, we'll have a lager, and we'll have a stout sort of thing. You know, you've kind of went, right, I'm opening this up, and I'm going to see, you know, what's going to land. There's a, like the White Grape Brute IPA. I thought that sounded wicked. You know, it's a
literally just, you must have been looking at my phone there. I literally pulled that up and I was like, oh, that sounds fucking the bollocks.
Yeah, honestly. And I just thought, like, you know, it's, you've got your pale ales, you've got your stouts and things like that. The Belgian wheat beer, I think, is an absolute winner.
Loads of styles.
That's something that kind of gets overlooked as well, like more of a traditional style beer, but in the catalogue of kind of modern breweries and stuff, it kind of falls down because of pales and nipas and deepas and all the rest of it. But it's just getting a really good wheat beer is like, it's really difficult to balance that, like that flavour up, because you know, you go too wheaty, then it scares a lot of people off in that as well. So no, I just wanted to kind of commend the fact that you've got a really wide variety of beer styles that are going to kind of give you as much opportunity to kind of reach as big an audience as possible.
Yeah, it's sort of not by design. Again, you guys, you homebrew and you can throw in and you realize that you like all the styles of beer and you want to try them. And it's born out of that. I mean, it's an absolute nightmare. We've got 10 beers on the go just now, and hopefully by next week it'll be 11. 10 different beers, and it's an absolute nightmare to try and keep on top of in terms of stocking and everything like that. I kind of wish I was able to just be like, nah, it's four beers and that's it, and I'll just drink. You can keep on stock of it, and it's just so much easier to handle it. But I just can't not try to, you know, brew something a little bit different and a little bit and the whole gamut of styles that you can find. And commercially as well, it certainly has a value, because we're not in a population center here that's big enough to support a style brewery. I couldn't just brew only nipas and nothing but nipas, because everybody else has got everything covered. Like, you can't do maybe in Glasgow, or just brew sour beers and only sour beers, like you can do in Edinburgh. It's, we just don't have that many people. So in a certain sense, it's good, but from like keeping beers in stock, trying to understand what you're going to brew next, what's going out fastest, what's not there, it makes it a bit of a nightmare. But at the same time, like yesterday, I was like, right, I want to brew a table beer, and I want to brew a, like, January, February obviously is quiet months, so for brewers, that's when we can go, you know.
See, when you say that, you're going to end up having 11 beers for the size of kit and the size of brewery. Like, that is baffling. Like, I think it's absolutely phenomenal. Like, you've just gone, you know what, I'm going to have 11 beers, and you know what, fuck it. Because you know what, I like them, and I'm going to brew them, and just tough shit. There's breweries out there who are quite happily will stick to 3 or 4 beers, and they'll just do that, and that's their core range, so to speak. And they'll just forever continue to brew them. And just, yeah, exactly, just churn them out one after another and just stick with them, because that's what's going to sell, and they get that, and that's we're in their remit of where they are, where they're based. They know that that's what's going to sell. But like you said, for yourself, where you're based, it's going to you're going to have to brew more in order to get it out there and get it sold, which I think is, mate, commend you so much. Do you find yourself sometimes, do you follow trends? Do you when there's a train of, whether it be double dry hop beers, or there's a trend of triples, you think, you know what, maybe I should actually jump on that and brew that as a trendy beer. Maybe I should get one out there. Two fingers. I'm just going to brew what the fuck I want.
I mean, we're all sort of subject to everybody else's social media feeds and all that kind of stuff. But to be honest, before I started brewing properly, for, you know, cold hard cash, it was you know, I was involved, I was aware of what was going on in the world of beer. And now it's like head down and just hardly ever get out of the damn place. So kind of, you know, tying into
the point where you're recording a podcast next to your brain.
Well, this is my office. This is my, there is nowhere else. So I'm probably not up on the scene, but if I see something and it sounds good, and then, yeah, I'm going to want to try it. And if it turns out to be good, then I'll be like, oh, well, that's awesome. You know, how did they brew it?
Yeah.
What were they doing with that? You know, brute IPA is something that kind of that came and went. And I think it deserved to go. Because it just wasn't that appealing. You know,
it's very Marmite beer.
Yeah, but there was no... I found it really difficult to find somewhere to go with it, because it's lack of flavour is kind of the thing, or the dryness is the thing. So these things come and go, but you know, I've got a brute IPA that I don't even think is a brute IPA. It's got no EMG in there. It's just all I did was mash it really low. You know, I mashed it at 62, which for my kit is really low.
Yeah.
Because I see attenuation is not an issue anymore since I've moved to this big kit. I get it down to like three points left. So it's a brute IPA, but it kind of doesn't matter, but it's dry. You know, I'm mashing low, it's dry, it's a dry beer. But then trying to do other things to it, like thickening the Sauvignon Blanc grape juice, and then pairing that with New Zealand hops, it gives that beer something else. But I don't think the style's got legs. I kind of wish I hadn't called it a brute IPA, because nobody would have thought it was if I didn't write it on the can.
Yeah.
I should have just called it like a New Zealand champagne IPA or something like that. So trends can kind of, you know, trends can suck you in as well when they die. Beer's beer.
Exactly. Beer is beer.
If it tastes great, then it's all good.
It is all good. I'm hoping the guys... you got it yourself. I was going to ask you what you changed to.
Well, I heard you talking. I took my headphones down the stairs to get my other half another gin and lemonade. And I picked this up at the fridge because it was sitting there and you were talking about it. I thought, I better have that. the Grisette can wait. I'm on topic for a change.
On topic.
6.8%. The dryness is incredible, Mark. You would love it. It's got that kind of champagne kind of fizz to it as well. I think it kind of lends itself to that kind of flavour, but it's really Moorish. There's nothing unappealing about it at all. At nearly 7% is great.
Fair play. Fair play, Gilroy.
Really enjoying it. Aye, the two beers I've had are stunning. I think I've got your order though, Mark.
I know. This is what happens when I lucky dipped the box, so I didn't look at any of them. I just, like, when Callum handed me the box, I just said, I'll take those two. And now I really wish I just maybe looked through them, because that might have been the two I picked. But, excuse me. not at all. To be fair, the stout was delicious, and I've opened your New England IPA, Split the Tree, 7.2%. This is basically fruit juice, as the way I would, like, it is 100% like mango and orange juice. It's got a wee bit of sweetness of the mango, like kind of mango-y, a bit of guava-y kind of feel. I'm actually reading it says mango, that's quite good. So I'm obviously on point there.
You've got over your cold, your taste buds now work.
Taste buds are back, exactly. It just has this kind of bit, it's got like a sweetness, sort of like kind of pineapple-y that kind of runs through it as well. Like, it's just, it's fruit juice. It's not overly carbonated, which I quite like. So it's not like kind of gassing you up to kind of take away from the juicy fruitiness, basically. It's far, far too easy to drink. And for somebody that's been getting wired into like Barocca and all these other fruit juice crap to try and get over the flu the last 2 weeks, if I could add a wee Brock into this thing, it would be
be ideal.
If you'd up the vitamin C content for next time, that would be ideal.
Exactly.
100%. I would have probably been fit and healthy within a week rather than struggling through.
The Lucas Aid alternative.
Honestly, it's a really, really interesting New England IPA, and it does everything that you want it to do for the style in terms of being juicy. And like you see, the colour of it's phenomenal. Like you can see through my staggeringly good glass there. But it is just tropical.
The only thing that was wrong with that view there was you need to go and buy yourself a dog fall glass, mate. That was the only thing that was wrong with that view.
The pink glasses that I've seen on the web shop
are getting bought. Orders in the middle.
Split the tree. When you picked up the can, what did you think? Like, not to look at, but to feel. Did you notice that it was really squishy?
Yeah, it's squishy, yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of, again, you're on point with what I'm trying to do with that beer, because to me, yeah, New England needs oats. It needs, the right water chemistry. It needs the wheat, but it's carbonation is something that a lot of them that I've tried just get it wrong. And here we carb with an IPA shouldn't be heavy carb to my mind. It kind of goes against that smoothness, that easy drinking kind of thing. So for that batch, I tried something different. So rather than carbing through the stone, I just tried to carb it like over a week with just head pressure. Uh-huh. And so the result, I think, in terms of the beer in the glass.
What was your carbonation level, if you didn't mind me asking? I don't know if you know, but
yeah, this could be a new here. Can squishiness. We've got can squishiness. We've got can feel.
I've been big into can feel for the last 2 years.
Can feel's been a big thing. Can squishiness could be a new thing, boys.
Especially with that style.
Definitely.
Man.
It should be that kind of, Cal mentions it all the time about that kind of soft pillowiness, mm-hmm. he says all the time. And that's what you're going for with that particular style. It's supposed to be, there's supposed to be a softness, whereas the kind of the brut or the white grape style with that champagne yeast in it just has, it's like tiny, the carbonation on that also suits, it's like tiny bubbles.
Small bubbles, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I just tried to look for this carbonation, but I can't remember. I can't find it. I think it was, I'm looking at my chart here, I think it was zero. So
it's just Mark trying to steal brewing ideas off you, don't worry.
2.3 is what I aim for with those ones. But it's definitely a different carb, and that you can. I've noticed that that's something that I'm spending quite a bit of time on at the moment. Is like the different. You can have the same pressure at the same temperature for your carb, but it's a different bubble size, and I'm trying to get on top of how to sort of affect that. And I often find that I can beers and they taste great right out the tank, and then when I'm packaging them in the can, the bubbles seem to bigger and they feel bigger on your tongue, and it drives me crazy trying to sort of understand why the hell that is. But the NEPA, the split the tree, usually carve it through the stone at the same levels, the same numbers, but it's definitely a softer, smoother carb when it's just been sat with head pressure for 10 days maybe. And I love it, but at the same time, I'm like, this can feels like shit. You know, people are going to pick up this can and think, what the hell is going on with this beer? You know, this amateur in his garage is selling us these squishy cans. And I sometimes feel like I have to carb beers, particularly the hazies, higher than I want to, so that
people
think that it's garbage, you know?
You know what? No, one, yes, fuck them. Two, yes. So there's been instances this year, there's two that spring to mind. I can't remember what beers it was, and they got slaughtered on social media because the beers were under-carbonated. All everyone was saying, oh, just squeeze the can. These cans are really soft and squishy. But that for me, and I agree with what Callum has said previously and what you've said yourself, you want the beer to be pillowy soft. You want it to be nice and smooth. You don't want it to be over-carbonated. So that makes total sense to me. I'm not a brewer. I've not brewed beer. Don't brew beer, don't intend brewing beer. I am just a sampler of our beer.
An enjoyer.
Exactly. I just enjoy and host the podcast. Ta-da, that's my job. But that makes complete sense. And I got hooked on that. And that when people are saying, oh, squeeze the can and if it's too soft, avoid the can. So I'm going around the bottle shop, squeeze. Oh, no, I don't. Oh, that's a bit soft. Don't know.
But yeah, actually, that's a problem. It's a problem.
I know. But now, actually, getting an explanation for it makes perfect sense. So now I'm going to go for the squishiest can I can find. And yeah, if it's under card, I'm like, fuck.
Does it mean that it does the carbonation, and this is for me as an amateur, does it protect, does it do anything for helping it travel at all? Does it make any difference, or does the fact that you're going for that kind of pillowy softness increase the level of care that you need to give it when you're keeping it somewhere, and who you give it to keep it, the maintain cold chain or anything like that? Does that make a difference, or can you do what you want with it? It's just a squishier can. Shut up, Scott.
I don't. Apart from the sort of fear of perception,
how it feels,
of how the can actually feels. I mean, the actual amount of carb in the beer is not going to my knowledge, have any effect on the longevity of the beer. I mean, we're using the cask machine here, and every batch we're doing DO in tank and then DO measurement afterwards in can.
Do you see though why an idiot would make that as to where's this been? It's squeezy.
That's exactly why I brought
I was
at a market at the weekend selling the cans of beer to people, and whether they're knowledgeable in the world of beer or whether they enjoy beer or don't know a thing and they're buying it for a gift, every time I pick up a can of the current batch of Split the Tree to hand it to people, I'm like, I'm just kind of like inside, I'm like, oh God.
Don't squeeze it.
I know that the compromise is that it gives that the carb that I want in the beer. And everything's learning. So I'm gonna spend some time trying to see if I can figure out if there's a way you can sort of disconnect them and get the same carb and get a firm can, because everybody wants one of those. I think your wider point as well, fresh beer doesn't travel well. I'm seriously on top of making sure that the numbers are good before beers go out, particularly kaleidoscope tree. Dissolved oxygen is going to just destroy those beers.
Yeah.
So keeping on top of that when we're dry hopping, keeping everything flushed with CO2 before it goes anywhere near the fermenter, pumping CO2 through the fermenter as we're dry hopping, because I don't have room for a cannon or a torpedo or anything like that. But the thing about having beer that's made locally, it's kept in a cold store. Right out the window here that I'm looking out of, and then if it goes into a supermarket system where it's sitting in a warehouse or whatnot, I know for a fact that beer's going to taste suboptimal within a reasonably short period of time, no matter what I'm doing in terms of DO and all that kind of thing. I think there's things that there's definitely processes that I could implement that will give that beer a longer shelf life. There's no doubt about that. part of what I want to do is, or what part of what I'm trying to do is keep the ingredients list, the real ingredients list, not the one that is written on the back of the can, to an absolute minimum. So there's processes that I could do to make that can, that beer taste better after being in a warm warehouse for 3 months. But there's things I don't want to do. And it's the reason I don't want to do it primarily is because it's dropping that peak flavor. These processes are, you know, pasteurization is an obvious example.
Yep.
And they're moving in pasteurization. It's getting better and better and better as people are understanding it and the equipment required. But it's still dropping that, it's dropping that peak flavor down. And that's from the get-go. So the beer will taste flat line all the way, but it won't have those highs. And that's why the local thing really works, because you get that zinc, you get that freshness straight off the bat. And it's only in the last few batches that we've stepped up our best befores on the hazies on Kaleidoscope and split it 6 months from 4 months.
Because
I was just, you know, I'm temperature cycling these beers and looking at them after 4 months and going, this beer is still good. Looking at after 6 months and going, this beer is still good. We can go and extend that date. But it's still going to taste better in month one than it will in month six. There's no way about that. There's no two ways about that.
For you as a brewer and the producer of this fantastic beer, to say, you know what, I'm going to reduce the best before on the cans from 6 to 4 because I want the consumers. What did I say?
You went the other way. He's increasing it for 46 because it's lasting longer, but it's being tested to last longer for that reason. Like, your point stands, that to be able to test it and not move it until such times as you're 100% happy
exactly.
with it, and shorten yourself until such time as you're 100% happy with it, means that the customers are getting it at the highest point that you can get it, your three-year radius shot, and pushing it to people, and it's in the state that you decided it was at its best to can it and get it ready to go. And it's the right recipe.
Exactly. Love that. Love that. Love when brewers and breweries have control of the beer, and you know what? Fucking more for it. More for it. Festival markets, obviously you're out and about at the markets around town, around the north of Scotland, etc. Where are people going to see you over the next couple of months leading up to Christmas? Where can they come and find you to go and pick up some fantastic beer and some Christmas presents for the craft beer lover in their family?
Here's your marketing opportunity.
I put my old school bingo voice on there as well.
This weekend is Inverness Farmers Market down on the high street. So that's the first market that we ever sold at 2 years ago, just on the cusp of Christmas. It's been awesome for us to have that outlet. So we're going for that one. The Sunday, we're down at Antala, another really good festive market, just like a half mile in that direction, over the River Ness. And Cawdor Castle, the week after, both days, Saturday, Sunday, we'll be there winging all sorts of gift boxes and pint glasses, 440 glasses, all that jazz. Maybe by the time we get to that one, we'll have our barrel ager on the go. So I'm hoping that one's going to be.
Hold the bus. Hold the bus. We'll get back to the markets. Hold on a wee minute.
I was going to say, snuck that one in quickly. You were talking about an extra beer being a table beer and that, but then no. We'll throw in a wee barrel.
Both ends of the scale. So in that tank there, right behind me, we've got a barrel-aged Baltic Porter moment that's been aged in rum barrels.
Nice.
I'm not a whiskey fan. I've tried to drink whiskey and I cannot drink it. But I love rum. And I thought, well, everybody's doing bourbon, everybody's doing scotch. Let's try and get a hold of some rum barrels. So we managed to get a hold of a couple of them from Speyside Cooperage. And that one's been, wrapped back into the fermenter, carbonated, and it's ready to can. I'm just waiting for cans to arrive and then labels to arrive, and we'll get that fired up. But I reckon it's coming in at about 12% at the moment. But it's quite easy drinking because...
For
that kind of beer, it's quite smooth. It's a brown sugar Baltic porter to kind of tie in with the whole rum thing. So yep. I think it was 20 kilos of brown sugar into the kettle of that one. And then, like I say, aged in rum barrels of no known origin. We picked up from Speyside Cooperage. It's only been in the barrels 3 months because of COVID. We couldn't get the barrels picked up and all that. And it doesn't need any more. I was a bit worried that it was going to be too oaky and the tannins coming through. But it's really good. Sitting nice at the moment. So we'll be hopefully having that by the end of next week. Should be labelled up. Oh. And ready to go. And
is that going in 440s?
Yes. I don't want it to go in 440s, but...
bills, it has to.
It's just, with all the stuff going on, I was like, I can't get, down into smaller bottles. Plus, there's another part of it too, which is... we go to all these markets selling our beer, hawking our wares, and there's loads of other people doing, exciting sort of local things.
Yeah.
And so I met an artist at one of these things who's just doing sort of pen illustrations of local landscapes and all that kind of stuff. So I will get with him. So it's kind of a collab beer where he's done the art on the label.
Nice.
And then 440s are a much better place to sort of
show. It's a much better canvas.
Yeah.
Than the bottles that Vault City use or something like that, where you can only put a tiny label. But, to hell with it, we'll just stick with 440s for this year and, see what happens for next year if we put it into fancy bottles or smaller cans or what.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
40 of this year is a lot.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But that's a shitter.
Hopefully it's going to be a proper Christmas this time. So people will be there. It's not like they're having to disappear anywhere. You'll be able to split a can. Or on if you're Mark Callum and I, you'll have one to yourself and be a greedy bugger. But that's fine.
that is absolutely fine. Apart from the festival markets that we just mentioned, where else is the best place to grab some Dog Falls Brewing beer?
For us Central Belters.
The best place for you unfortunates out with the Highlands is the web shop, the online shop at www.dogfallsbrewing.com. And we deliver locally on Friday afternoons, which was a sort of come about from COVID. We just had to get cracking and try and figure out a way to get beer to people. So, and it's also a really good way because it's like one point in the week when I can leave the place and go out and do my delivery round. So I get some to see the world and fresh air and all that jazz. So that's free for orders over £24, I think, within a 15-mile radius of Inverness. And then beyond that, it's parcel worth 24-hour deliveries, so order through the online shop, and then we'll wing it out to you. Because we're only tiny, there's not like 3 days where you're hanging around waiting to see if it's gone or not. It's pretty much, if you order it, that it's getting shipped the next day, and it'll be with you the day after.
I'm tremendously impressed with that. Like I said, when it arrived, it arrived to Callum, and I was like, I'm actually surprised it actually arrived in time, because we've had instances with other breweries but it's meant to arrive the next day and it's just not happened. But amazing service.
It's been really good for us. A lot of people slag off the people that we use, but the national provider, as it were. But 99 times out of 100, it's just gone and it gets there on the next day, and there's no messing, there's no nothing like that. So yeah, £5 delivery for up to 24 cans up to a case, and it's the order on that's a Wednesday, and it's pretty much going to be there on the Friday.
Perfect.
That's nothing, is it? And in terms of delivery fee, I mean, you've seen that there's, what is it you were talking, even at the weekend, Marcus, some have been eight, ten, things like that to get it out, and it just, you go filling your stuff, and I know it makes sense to then take advantage of 24, which isn't a hard, you're not twisting my arm much there to go up
No, it's not a hard sell.
Put it that way, it's not a hard sell with us, but even if you're saying, well, I want to sample this and I'm going to get a dozen or half a dozen or whatever it is, if you're kind of selection boxing, if you like, or trying to get yourself stocked up for Christmas time, a fiver's nothing, really.
No, I mean, not at all.
For somebody to hock it to you within 2 days, that's exactly. Nothing. You couldn't go up and get it for a fiver, put it that way. Like,
no.
You know what I mean?
With the price of fuel, fuck.
Exactly. And all that kind of thing. You know, there's no way you're going up to get it for a fiver. So.
Not at all. Not a fucking tub, but definitely go to dogsfallbrewing.com. Go to the online shop, grab yourself some beers. You will not be disappointed. A selection of 10 beers at the moment. There's going to be 11, 12. You will not, like, mate. Unreal. Unbelievable. Dogfallsbrewing.com. Get yourself over to the web shop and grab yourself some beers. Again, shout out to Dave, aka The Hop, to the Highlands on Instagram, who contacted us and said, yo, you need to get Dogfalls on your podcast and have a chat with them. And thank you, because it's not been disappointing whatsoever. The beer has been fantastic. The chat has also been fantastic. And hopefully, if you listen to this podcast, you'll head over to the website and grab yourself some beer from Bob, because you will not be disappointed as well. As always, head to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Search Beer Fridge Podcast. Like, follow, and share. And while you're at it, search Dog Falls as well. And like, follow, and share all their content as well, because you will not be disappointed. You get all the craft beer news as well from the new beers, and when you get that barrel aged little bad boy, which sounds unbelievable. That's coming from me as a non dark beer drinker. It sounds fantastic.
Ebs.
I think Gavin's going to get us all a can of that for our Christmas, as you know.
I think Gav's going to tell you fuck off, but
Dogs, it's worth a try.
Worth a try. Good try there, Scotty boy. Dogfallsbrewing.com. Go yourself, get yourself over there and get some of the beers, like I mentioned. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We are sponsored by This Week in Craft.beer. Sign up to the free weekly newsletter. Got all the craft beer news from your favorite breweries and that all important new beers list as well. This Week in Craft.beer. And we're powered by Patreon. Head to patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Sign up and show your support for the podcast. You might get some homebrew from the guys, which I know is nearly ready.
This weekend.
Oh, it's exciting stuff. Patreon.com/beerfridgepodcast. Bob, absolute pleasure to talk to you. I've had so much fun chatting with you. The beers sound absolutely phenomenal. There'll be a wee cheeky purchase from down south. Don't tell the wife. In the next 24 hours. But yes, absolute phenomenal stuff. And until next time in the Beer Fridge Podcast, real beer, real breweries, real opinions. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.